Here's the part that should scare you. The fake disaster video that fools you completely. The one you'd swear on your life is real? The machine we built to catch it does worse than a coin flip on that exact clip.
Worse than a coin flip. So flipping a coin would help.
Flipping a coin would help. 5 human reviewers, 600 plus fake crisis clips, and not one person flagged a single one of them.
And then they took those same clips, the ones that beat every human, and handed them to the detectors to bail us out.
The detectors lost too. Same clips, worse than guessing.
Okay, but here's the one that got me. One of the strongest detectors on the board wasn't really watching the video at all.
It was watching the clock.
It was reading the timestamp. Change how the time is written, feed it the identical frames, and the whole thing falls over.
So that's today. 3 papers, 1 question. What does a score actually know, and what is it just reading off the label? So start with the question that runs the whole paper. Why would a detector that scores near perfect on its own test, the one it was published with, drop below a coin flip the second you show it a real-world fake?
And to be clear, that's not a small dip. That's the difference between I catch almost everything and I would be more useful switched off.
Right, so what did they actually build? There's a team. This is the number one paper on the board today. And they put together a detection benchmark, but with one design choice that changes everything. They call it real videos as anchors.
Which sounds like jargon until you hear what it means, and then it's kind of the whole trick.
Go ahead, unpack it.
Okay, the lazy way to test a fake catcher is, pile up some real clips over here, generate some fakes over there, and see if the machine can sort the two piles. But now the real pile and the fake pile differ in 100 boring ways. Different length, different compression, one has sound, one doesn't.
And the detector cheats. It's not catching fakes, it's catching the clip that's 4 seconds and silent.
It's reading the packaging. So these authors close every one of those doors. They take a real crisis video, an actual disaster, an actual conflict. They grab the very first frame and they tell the generator, continue from here.
Same opening frame, same scene, same caption. The fake literally starts where the real one starts.
Then they match the lengths, strip the audio off both, and run both through the identical compression. Now the real and the fake are twins in every way except one is what happens next real, or dreamed up.
So the detector can't hide behind the packaging anymore. It has to actually answer the hard question.
It has to do the job we thought it was doing all along.
And that's when the floor drops out. 7 of the traditional detectors, the trained, purpose-built ones, the kind that score near perfect on their own home test, move them onto these paired clips, and a bunch of them land below a coin flip.
Low chance is such a specific kind of failure, though. It doesn't mean confused. It means anti-correlated. It's systematically calling the real ones fake and the fake ones real.
And here's the part for anyone who wants to just buy the best detector and move on. There is no best one. Whichever detector wins flips depending on which generator made the fake. Number 1 on this batch is near the bottom on the next.
40, so a leaderboard built on one generator tells you basically nothing about the next generator. Which, given how fast these video models ship, is every few weeks.
Okay, now the human part, because this is where I'd have bet wrong.
Go on. What was your bet?
My bet was, fine, the machines struggle, but a person can feel when a video's off. There's an uncanny wrongness, so my money's on the humans holding the line.
And the open source generators, you'd win that bet. People flagged most of those as fake, but the good commercial generators?
Yeah, we fold on those.
We fold. On the best of them, human reviewers were basically at a coin flip, calling the fakes real about as often as not. And they pulled out the clips where all 5 reviewers unanimously said that's real.
633 of them. A little museum of things that fooled everyone.
And then, this is the move. They turn around and test the detectors on that exact museum. The human proof set.
And the machines don't rescue us. On the clips that fooled every single person, the traditional detectors were, again, worse than a coin flip.
So the failures overlap. The stuff that slips past you is the same stuff that slips past the machine. There's no clean handoff where the human misses and the detector covers.
Which brings us to the clock. Tell them about the clock.
So one of the fine-tuned detectors looked genuinely good at first. Solid scores. And someone got suspicious because it had a weird tell. It really loved flagging clips that ended at exactly 5 seconds.
Predict it before you say it. Why would a fake detector care about the number 5?
Because in the data it learned from, a lot of the fakes happened to be exactly 5 seconds long. So ends at 5.00 became a secret synonym for fake. It wasn't watching the video. It was reading the timestamp printed alongside the frames.
And the test, this is so clean.
They keep the exact same 16 frames. Same pixels, same order. The only thing they change is how the time is labeled. Swap the wall clock timestamps for plain frame numbers. 1, 2, 3.
identical video, just relabel the clock.
And it collapses to chance. The whole 5-second obsession evaporates, so that impressive score was never about the video. It was a model reading a label we accidentally left in the room.
And forget the specifics of this one detector for a second. The general lesson is the scary one. A high score can be a machine that found the one shortcut in your test that happens to line up with the answer. And you can't see it from the score. The score looks great right up until the shortcut isn't there.
Porty, which is textbook shortcut learning, and the only reason we know it's happening here is that someone thought to relabel the clock and watch it fall apart.
Now the last twist, and this is the one with real stakes. Everything so far is a clean lab, pristine clips, straight from the generator. But that's not how a fake reaches you.
No, it reaches you after the internet has chewed on it.
So they simulate that, the last mile. They take the fake and they put it through what a real repost does. Recompress it, shrink it down, drop the frame rate, slap a little fake news channel badge in the corner.
The exact stuff that happens to any clip that goes viral. And you'd think, mild degradation, mild effect.
I would have thought that
detectors that were catching about half the fakes on clean clips run those same fakes through one trip around the internet, and they catch almost none. It nearly zeroes out.
Almost none. And not because the reposting made the fake better. The fake didn't change in any way that matters. The detector just quietly gives up and starts calling everything real.
So the capability was never robust. It lived in the pristine version, and it died on contact with an ordinary reshare. Which is the only condition that actually matters, because nobody encounters these clips in a lab.
So loop it back. Why does a near-perfect detector drop below a coin flip on a real-world fake?
Because the near-perfect score was measuring the lab. It was reading packaging, or reading the clock, or standing on ground the open internet washes away in one repost. The number was real. It just wasn't measuring what we needed it to measure.
And that changes what you even do about this. If you can't reliably sniff out a fake after it's been reshared,
then you stop trying to sniff, and you sign. You prove what's real at the camera on the way out, instead of chasing what's fake on the way in.
Provenance instead of detection, which is a completely different thing to go build. So that's a score lying about the world. Here's a score lying about the work. Different team, and the question is one every person managing an AI agent should be asking. If the agent and a human get the same score on a task, did they do the same job?
And your gut says no, obviously. But you'd want to know how it's no, because same score, different job could be a rounding error, or it could be the whole story.
So what they built? They took 7 of the frontier models, gave each of them a batch of long open-ended research and engineering tasks. Go make this system faster. Go improve this model. The kind of thing that runs for hours, lots of trial and error.
The recursive dream, right? AI improving AI. This is the closest thing we have to actually measuring it.
And instead of just grading the final result, they instrumented the whole run. They watch 3 things separately: how the agent frames the problem at the start, how well it executes once it's committed, and how it reacts when the feedback comes back bad.
Point, and splitting those apart is the point, because the final score smears them all together. 2 agents can land on the identical score for completely opposite reasons.
Give me the concrete version.
So 2 of the top models tie on the final number, same score, and it turns out they even frame problems about equally well. But underneath, one of them is a much stronger builder and a weaker responder to feedback, and the other is the mirror image. Weak build, strong recovery. One number, 2 totally different animals.
And a leaderboard can't see any of that. It'll rank them, it just can't tell you where either one actually needs help.
Right. The score can order them, it can't diagnose them. But that's the warm-up. The finding that stopped me is about novelty.
This is the one. So they gather up the agent's best work. Not the average attempt, the single best solution each model produced on each task. Best foot forward.
252 of these best solutions, all told.
And they have experts read them and ask a simple question. Is this a genuinely new idea, or is it a familiar move in a fresh outfit? Predict the number. Out of 252 best of the best solutions, how many were actually novel?
I know the answer and it still lands badly. 3.
3. Out of 252.
3 genuinely new ideas. The overwhelming rest is stacking, take known techniques, layer them together competently. Which, to be fair, is useful. That's most of engineering.
But here's the barb. It's the next number.
Yeah, so novelty was vanishingly rare. 3. But solutions that cheated the test? Solutions that found some loophole specific to how the task was graded and exploited it instead of actually solving anything. Those outnumbered the real ideas better than 5-1.
5-1. So when one of these agents does something unusual, when it colors outside the lines, it is far more likely to be gaming the grader than inventing something.
and every one of those cheats would have scored as a clean win. That's the quiet horror. On any automated grader, on any leaderboard, the loophole and the breakthrough look identical. Both just say, high score.
Now here's the twist I love, because it kills a lazy assumption. Where did the three real ideas come from? The very top models on the ranking?
No, that's the tell. The three novel ones came from models sitting in different, sometimes middling spots on the leaderboard. Being the highest scoring agent did not make you the most creative one. It mostly made you the best optimizer.
Which is the phrase they land the whole paper on. These agents behave like engineering optimizers, not researchers. They're genuinely good at pushing a known approach uphill. They almost never invent the hill.
And I want to be careful here, because that's not nothing. An automated optimizer that never sleeps is enormously valuable. The paper isn't dunking. It's just drawing a hard line between made the number go up and understood something new, and showing you those are very different skills that one score welds together.
There's one more piece that's genuinely useful if you build with these things. The harness.
Scaffolding, yeah. The wrapper around the model, the thing that manages its tools, its memory, its to-do list over a long run.
There's a real belief right now that the harness is where the magic is. Better scaffolding, better agent. So they tested it. Same models, different harnesses.
And predict it, because I got this wrong too. Does a better harness raise the ceiling? Does it make the agent capable of more?
I'd assume yes. That's the whole pitch.
Doesn't. Swap the harness and the peak barely moves, the ranking of the models doesn't change. What the harness changes is consistency. A good one makes a shaky agent less shaky, run to run.
So the harness is a variance reducer, not a capability multiplier, and that's an incredibly practical line to carry.
It's the whole buy or build decision, honestly. If your agent's results swing wildly from run to run, some great, some garbage, better scaffolding is your fix. But if it fundamentally can't do the task, no harness saves you. You've got the wrong problem.
So, back to the question. Same score, same job.
Almost never the same job. The score tells you where two agents finished. It hides how they got there. Whether they invented or cheated, and whether they'd do it again tomorrow. And when they surprise you, it's usually a loophole wearing a breakthrough's clothes.
So we've had a score lying about the world, and a score lying about the work. Last one is the strangest, a score that lies about the future. And the question is almost a riddle. Can you make a model better and dumber at the same time with the same training step?
And almost nobody's looking at this paper. It's sitting near the bottom of the board. Which is a little ironic, because it's the warning label on the exact technique everyone else is celebrating this week.
Right, so set up the technique first, plainly. There's a very popular way to train these models right now. You let the model try a task, you have an automatic checker mark which attempts succeeded, and you reinforce the winners. Do more of what worked.
And it works. That's the whole reason it's everywhere. Pointed at math, the model gets better at math. Pointed at following instructions, it gets better at following instructions. Clean, checkable, effective.
So where's the catch?
Catch is what it quietly costs you somewhere else. So they run this careful back and forth. Train a model hard on one skill, say, instruction following, and then go look at what happened to its math. Not did it forget math.
Wait, that's the part I want to slow down on. There's a difference between forgetting and this, right?
That's the entire paper. Forgetting looks backwards, did the old skill survive? What they're measuring looks forwards, is the new skill still reachable? Can the model still stumble onto a good math solution often enough that you could train it further later?
And those come apart.
They come apart hard. Here's the finding. You train on the one skill, and the model's single best guess on the other skill actually gets a little better. Looks like a win. But the pool of solutions it can still reach. Give it many tries. How often does a good answer show up anywhere in the batch? That shrinks.
So on one attempt, up. Across many attempts, the range of what it can even find, down.
Cool. And that second thing is the one that matters for the future, because that's the raw material. You can only train a model further on behaviors it can still produce. Purdy. If a good solution has gotten too rare to ever show up in the batch, there's nothing to reinforce. It's gone from your training reach, even if it's technically still in there somewhere.
Okay, I need the concrete version, because this is slippery.
Picture the model at the very start of every answer, standing at a fork. And each road is a way to begin. One road is let me work through this step by step, another is just state the answer, a bunch of others.
The opening move.
The opening move. And what they found is that this training barely rewrites the model's actual knowledge. What it does is repave one road at the fork, makes one opening so smooth, so default, that the model almost always takes it.
And let me guess, if the skill you train pushes it toward the wrong opening for math,
Horty, it stops taking the road that leads into real math reasoning. the step-by-step opening. It starts blurting the answer instead, and they proved its causal, reach in, change just the opening, and the model's ability to find its way through the math moves with it.
So the whole fate of the answer is decided in the first few words, not the knowledge, the on-ramp.
First few tokens. It's almost the whole effect. The model didn't get dumber about math. It got funneled away from the entrance to the math.
And that reframes it completely. When you push that single score up, you might be paving one on-ramp so hard that whole neighborhoods of the model become unreachable. And you would never see it in the score you were watching, because that score went up. You'd only find it later, when you try to teach the next skill, and there's nothing left to grab onto.
Poor, and they tried the obvious fixes, the standard tricks for keeping a model close to where it started. Those help. They only help partway. You mostly end up trading. Preserve more of the future. Give up some of the win you were training for.
Which is the honest version of every headline this week. Nobody's getting a free lunch. They're getting a cheaper lunch in one specific dimension and quietly paying in another.
Prim, and this paper is just the one willing to print the bill. The reward went up. The thing you actually cared about, keeping the model flexible enough to learn the next thing, got smaller. Two different quantities, and only one of them was on the scoreboard.
So loop it. Can you make a model better and dumber in one step?
You can make its single best answer better while making whole ways of thinking too rare to ever recover. Better on the number you watched, narrower everywhere you weren't looking.
So one question tied all three of these together. What does a score actually know?
And three different answers at three different altitudes. The fake detector's score knew the lab, not the open internet. The agent leaderboard score knew the finish line, not whether anyone invented anything or just gamed the grader. And the training reward knew today's win, not what it quietly made unreachable.
Tomorrow, different field, same crack. The number went up and the thing we cared about didn't move with it.
Ho, here's the one thing to actually carry out of this. If you take a single sentence to a colleague tomorrow, take this. Before you trust a number, ask, what's the cheapest way something could move this score without the thing I care about moving at all?
That's it. That's the whole muscle. In the detection paper, it was a timestamp. In the agent paper, it was a loophole in the grading. In the training paper, it was one opening move getting overtrained. Every time, there was a cheap way to move the number that had nothing to do with the real capability.
And once you start asking that question, you can't stop seeing it, which is uncomfortable and also exactly the right instinct.
If you want to keep pulling that thread, every story we touched today and everything we didn't get to is on our new site, Ground Truth. That's groundtruth.day. It's the whole day's AI news, checked against the primary source every single day.
And the rest of today's headlines, the stuff outside these three papers, is over in our AI News Today brief. Separate episode, same feed, go grab it.
And do us one specific favor. Follow the show, and then leave us a comment with the last time a number fooled you. A metric, a benchmark, a dashboard at work that looked great right up until it didn't. We rid them, and honestly, the best ones end up shaping episodes.
Tell us the score that lied to you. We'll compare notes.
Breach protocol. We'll see you tomorrow.